Good morning, everyone, and welcome. The inspiration for today was to celebrate our 2 years here in Redwood City, in this building, and it's, you know, I feel quite amazed by what has happened here, by our community. The growth of our community, the amazing people who are part of our community, and I could never have imagined 10, 12, 14 years ago that we would grow to what we've become here in the peninsula, and so it feels like a nice time to just remember what we've become and celebrate it, enjoy it, be thankful for it. Friday, I was at the Zen Hospice in San Francisco, and one of the person who's the volunteer coordinator there, one of the people who runs the Zen Hospice, explained to me that they had two patients at Zen Hospice right now at the Page Street site, and she talked about one of them who had appeared, who had showed up 2 weeks ago. And she did it in the context of talking about how the idea of spiritual care at the Zen Hospice had evolved over time. And she said the old model of, like, hospital care, I suppose, or maybe at the hospice, was that of care of someone, healing care, health care, taking care of someone, medical care, had operated in the model of a pie, and different people had responsibility for different segments of the pie, and you wouldn't cross over from one pie piece to another pie piece, and so different people had expertise, and so you'd bring in different people who knew different pies, and if you had enough people, you'd have the full pie. The model that evolved then at Zen Hospice was from that to the idea of a circle with a patient in the middle, and that everybody who was around the circle focusing on the patient was flowing around the circle, moving around the circle, picking up responsibilities in the circle as it was needed. So it was much more fluid among the caregivers. And then how it evolved at Zen Hospice was eventually they kept the idea of a circle as a model for what they're doing there, but they bumped the patient out of the center. She didn't use that language. I think she had a much better way of expressing it, but they moved the patient from the center to become part of the circle. And so it wasn't always only focusing on the patient, but everybody was in it together, including the patient. The patient was responsible for the care as much as anybody else, and everybody was working together as a team, without the kind of self-centeredness of just, or the centeredness of kind of only on the patient. And so she talked about this patient who came 2 weeks ago, who came to die. And that's usually what you do when you come to hospice. And he showed up with a 12-foot moving van and six friends, and started to unload the moving van and fill up this room at the hospice. And now, it could be quite understandable that someone's going to die. They'd like to have some of the things that are dear to them around them, some of the things they're used to, and bring them comfort. But I walked by his room, the door was open, and it was rather packed. And he asked then, and then he got there and he had all these ideas of, that kind of like they were supposed to take care of him, the Zen Hospice, and he was like the center of the circle, and he started asking for things. Well, can I put my things out in the hallway? I need more space, and I need to have my, room painted, or I need to get, my meals at a certain time, and, expecting everything to focus around him. And in the 2 weeks that he's been there, the person who's telling me this said it was quite remarkable that he began to shift from the center to being more part of the circle than everybody else. And he was well enough so that he offered to kind of start helping a little bit at the hospice with some of the activities they were doing there. He started to ask about how he could maybe get some boxes because he didn't need all the stuff and maybe move it all out. So the shift for the patient from being kind of self-centered there to then participating and being part of the circle. And I think it's a beautiful idea. And I think of it that way for our center here, that there's no one at the center. And none of us hopefully see ourselves as the center of our own practice, but rather we see that our practice is integrated with other people, with the community and the world in a sense, and that we're all participating in this circle of practice. And there are times when we get more help or care or support than we offer, and there are other times when we are offering more than we get. And that it's a dance, it's a give and take, it's a wonderful kind of moving back and forth. And to only show up thinking that it's for me and myself and mine, and what's in it for me, I think simply doesn't work as a model for Buddhist practice. I think that the way that the mind moves, the heart moves towards liberation, it cannot stay fixated with itself at the center only. But rather has to be some fluidity of moving back and forth, in and out, or being in the circle and flowing around the circle, offering support, receiving support, all of it. It reminded me of a story that goes like this about a Buddhist nun who had a statue of a Buddha that was gold-plated, gold kind of had gold flakes stuck on it all over. So it's quite beautiful. And she had it for many, many years. She carried it with her everywhere she went. And she was very proud of this Buddha she had. And then she came to a temple and where there were burning incense. And she went and offered incense to her Buddha. She put it there on the altar and offered incense. But she didn't want the incense to be shared by the other Buddha statues that were there, because it was her Buddha. And it was so special. So she took this this little, towel or some kind of something funnel and to make sure that all of her burning incense was funneled into her Buddha. And the results of that is that all the smoke from that incense darkened up the nose and the face of that Buddha, and it became quite ugly. So be very careful again about what you put at the center, and what you keep at the center. And again, the me, myself, and mine approach. The Buddha gave a very important teaching. It's recorded in the discourse on the Buddha's final kind of days. I didn't manage to bring it along. Here it is. In preparing or thinking about preparing coming down here today, I kind of looked over some of the newsletters and letters, fundraising letters, various kinds of things we published over the years and sent out to people. And then I saw some of the stuff was on the little quotes at the top that we'd selected. And we had a community meeting in November 8, 1998, back in St. Mark's. And it says, our Sangha is in the process of an exciting challenge, one that is new for our tradition, developing a community-based Buddhist practice center in an urban setting. We would like to gather as a community to explore our future, our thoughts about the growth of our Sangha, and to find out what kind of opportunities for spiritual growth Sangha members would find helpful. And then at the top of that letter, it has its quote from the Buddha. As long as the followers of the way, as long as followers of the Buddha hold regular and frequent assemblies, they may be expected to prosper and not decline. as long as they meet in harmony, break up in harmony, and carry on their business in harmony, they can be expected to prosper and not decline. So to gather together periodically in many different ways, and today we gather together to celebrate, and we're expected to prosper if we do this and come together in harmony. Another letter that came out then in October of 1999, this followed a community meeting we had in September of 1999, where we talked about the possibility of buying a church in Palo Alto that was maybe going to be available, called the AME Zion Church. It hadn't been used in about 30 years or so, 25 years, and looked like it hadn't been used for 50. There were walls kind of coming down, there were holes in the roof, and it was quite a sight to see. And people thought I was a little bit crazy when I suggested that we buy it. But we went ahead thinking very seriously about buying it and looking into it, and we had this community meeting to see what would our community be interested in this crazy idea. And so we presented the various options and scenarios around buying it and looking into it. And we were just kind of a testing the waters kind of thing to see if there was interest. And to our amazement, at the end of the meeting, people started giving us checks. We didn't come expecting money, or we weren't even going to ask for money. And within a few weeks, without even sending out a fundraising letter or anything, we had received $40,000. And we weren't saying we were going to buy this, because it wasn't clear that we could. And in the end, we couldn't, because it wasn't made available to us, to a sigh of relief of many people. We'd probably still be there with hammers and nails. But it was a very important catalyst for our continued growth, that meeting and that possibility of buying it. And I certainly was deeply, deeply moved by the enthusiasm and the goodwill of people who then stepped forward without us asking to offer funds and support for that. So then a few months later, we did send a fundraising letter out. And this time the quote on top of the letter said this: "Liberation is sustained by seeing clearly. Seeing clearly is sustained by joy, serenity, and concentration. These are sustained by confidence. Confidence is sustained by association with good spiritual friends." So here we see a chain of support. And that's from the Buddha. And then we added in the letter the following, below that quote: "Association with good spiritual friends is sustained by a place to meet. A place to meet is sustained by the support of its participants." So here we were still fundraising. We were still hoping to have a place. And suddenly it got loud. And now we have this place to meet. And we've had a tremendous support from our community to have this place to meet. I think of, in my life, what things I've seen, what's happened here in Redwood City, what's happened here in the peninsula, is one of the most inspiring things I've seen. I'm certainly phenomenally grateful for the people's practice who come here, all of your practice who come here and practices here. One of the advantages I have over some of you is that I talk to a lot of people in our Sangha, and more people than any one of you. And I see the tremendous dedication and sincerity and maturity of people here. And I wish I could just kind of broadcast what I see, because it's really a phenomenal thing. But you can see it for yourself very clearly, tangibly, here, physically here in the building. Our owning this building, having this place here, is a result of the goodwill of many, many, many people. In a way that I think it becomes clear if you understand that all the money that went to buying this building came from people making voluntary donations. So I think we've had a relatively soft approach to fundraising. That's been certainly my dedication to have that. I haven't wanted the Dharma being offered in ways that seemed like we were charging for it or seemed like there was pressure. And so the way that the kind of the funds for this has come has then been hopefully in that spirit of relaxed generosity, of goodwill, and people being inspired for it. So one tangible expression of this wonderful maturity and goodwill and beauty of this community has been in owning this building. Another expression of it has been taking care of this building. It's really amazing to me that so many people have stepped forward to be volunteers. And I think at some last time there was a count, I think there were some like 60 volunteers.
70
volunteers. And if you add up all the things that people do, and there are probably things people do that we don't even know about, because I've noticed I've come down here and found things done that I didn't even know needed to be done, or I didn't know anybody had thought about them, or I hadn't thought about it myself, and people just taking the initiative and beautiful initiative on their own. And part of the vision, the spiritual vision that I've had for ourselves as a community, is one as a community that was based on everybody participating in sharing and responsibility for our practice together. Everybody's in the circle together. And so I hadn't wanted someone to be an employee, someone working here, because then there's a number of problems arise. One is that then that person becomes the person who's supposed to do things. And it's so easy then to kind of expect more and more of that person, because that's the person getting paid. And the main problem of that is that it takes the opportunity away from all of us to be volunteers, to take responsibility for the very place that we're practicing in. And I don't want anybody to feel like they have to be responsible, but to have the opportunity to take responsibility, I think, is a very important avenue or channel for people to mature in their practice. I don't think it's possible to mature spiritually in the Buddhist tradition without somehow feeling that our practice is connected to others and helping others, involved in others. If we only put ourselves at the center of the circle, at some point the practice gets interrupted or truncated. So the vision of being kind of volunteer-based community is one that really allows that circle to spin smoothly and completely and not having any gaps in it. And then I'm very grateful for everybody's practice here. I mean, the practice is really what we're about here. All the different forms and ways in which people do spiritual practice. The practices of liberation, the practices of being aware, being present, the practices of compassion, of loving kindness. There's a whole range of practices that people do. And it's just really amazing that people want to do this. There are a lot of other things people could do with their lives. And a lot of people choose to do this. And I think it's one of the most beautiful things a person can do in their lives, is to practice and to practice together. I was talking on Friday with Paul Haller, who's the abbot at San Francisco Zen Center. And we were talking about where to die. Where's a good place to die? how to die. There was a context for it. We were at Zen Hospice, and he had just led this meditation, guided visualization, on dying. Imagine that you have to wake up and you have to go to the shower and you feel this lump, and you go to the doctor, and the doctor says, "Well, I think we need a biopsy," and the biopsy comes back, and you see that, he has bad news. I think it's cancer, and it starts chemotherapy, but it doesn't help, and slowly, you get sicker and sicker, and so it's a whole visualization, to carry you along. Right up until the moment when you die. It's very evocative for people, and it teaches people a lot about themselves. And so after doing it, we had these conversations that came out of it. And so I was talking with Paul about it. And he said if he could choose where he was going to die, he would die within a practice community, in a place where people were practicing together. that was the most important thing for him and the most beautiful and the most profound thing for him. And to have that happening in the context of him dying was the most important thing that he could think of. But to have a practice community, even when we're alive or still living and death seems far away, is really, really helpful. I know from my own spiritual practice, Buddhist practice, I could not have done it if I didn't have community around me, people supporting me and people to practice with. And I still feel that way. And my own practice is very much supported by all the people who sit here and practice here. And I feel encouraged, I feel inspired. I feel like I learn from people here in many different ways that sometimes is quite, maybe a little bit humbling, because I'm supposed to be the teacher here. And, you know, I'm supposed to kind of be the model of the person who, you know, does it all or does it right or is ahead of you, all of you. And then I see people here who have a greater spirit of generosity than I have. And wow, and that inspires me. Isn't that amazing? Or a greater spirit of you know, all kinds of ways in which they people, I feel like, wow, I'm really impressed by that. And I feel supported and encouraged and in my own practice to kind of go further and deepen myself in the context of it all. I sometimes feel that, you know, our community, our building, our practice opportunities we have here are very simply a catalyst for people being inspired in their own self, in their own hearts, to engage themselves in something which at times can be quite difficult. And times are quite easy. To find out how to clarify their hearts, their minds, how to live by their best intentions that they can find in themselves, and how they could try to help free themselves from that which gets in the way of their freedom, of their best intentions, gets in the way of their compassion and love. And so we're a catalyst for this, all this happening, and we come here and we share that work together. We do that work together. And I think that's really a fantastic thing. We've been doing it here now for 2 years in Redwood City, in this building. And I feel in many ways very content with what we've come to, what we are right now. And at the same time, I feel this momentum that's happening that's not even from me, not from me, just the momentum because of growth and development and going further, because that's what happens when people grow. The growing is a process that either deepens or goes further and further. And so, you know, as I'm feeling people's growth here, I feel a responsibility and need for us to kind of meet people's growth or offer the next level of growth. If people get to a certain level, and how do we offer the next? How do we expand the opportunities and all that? And so it's wonderful to feel this momentum. It feels, you know, I read yesterday a newsletter from the kind of a national Soto Zen Association newsletter. And they were talking about a conference that happened 30 years ago in Hawaii, a kind of a Buddhist conference. Or no, it was a conference that happened recently this year. But it was at the conference, someone spoke up to introduce George Tanabe, who's a professor at the University of Hawaii in Buddhist studies. And he's kind of a skeptic and cynic and doesn't really like religion. And he was one of my professors. I studied with him, and so I know him well. And 30 years ago, he told a visiting Buddhist priest from Japan, he said, "Buddhism is dying in America. There'll be a funeral for it soon." And now I think he was mostly talking about the kind of the ethnic Japanese community that was quite strong in Hawaii 30 years ago. It was for the last 100 years. And it kind of was a shock to this visiting Japanese priest to hear this. 30 years later, they have this conference, and they invite George Tanabe to give a little talk or at the conference. And the person who introduced George Tanabe was that priest from 30 years ago. And he reminded George, maybe that's why they invited him to the conference. You know, 30 years ago you said, and look what's happened in America in 30 years. So I feel this momentum of growth and development happening, and even right here. And we'll do our best to keep that in a healthy frame, healthy direction, going well in a healthy way. And but I hope all of you will participate in helping us move forward in an organic way, natural way, as we all mature and develop as practitioners. And this wonderful light, bright light in Redwood City here, will shine brighter for more and more people everywhere. There is a practice in Buddhism, a concept called anumudana. And anumudana means something like to rejoice, to be thankful, to be appreciative. One person translates it as jubilation. And it's sometimes, I think it was a very, in ancient India, it was a very vocal and active celebratory kind of expression to do anumodana. It was sometimes done with drums and trumpets and whistling and dancing and probably, you know, active, very loud chanting and flowers being thrown in the air and parades and, you know, and we get the sense a little bit of kind of this Protestant-like flavor of, you know, of often Vipassana Buddhism in the West, you know, I was born a Lutheran, so what do you expect? but there was, you know, certainly a much more kind of revivalist kind of spirit sometimes. You know, I don't know if that's the right word, but kind of much more celebratory and exciting and happy, and this anumodana was part of that. And the thing about anumodana is that it's considered very meritorious to do that. It's a wonderful, beautiful quality. It develops the goodness, it develops our merit to celebrate in the goodness in the world around us and to offer thanks and appreciation. And there's a Mahayana sutra called The Perfection of Wisdom in 8,000 Lines, Perfection of Wisdom literature, that has a whole chapter about anumodana, and it has this visualization that it's done as part of it. It says you imagine all the goodness, all the merit, all the beauty, all the power, all the force that comes from all the Buddhas, all the bodhisattvas, all the practitioners, all the sangha, all the people around you who practice. Imagine all the goodness that comes from their good ethics, their virtue, from their meditation practice, from their generosity, from their loving kindness, from their compassion, from their good intentions, from their endeavorings. And you imagine all, you know, all these people practicing and engaged in practice and having matured themselves all over the world and all through time. And you take and you roll it up into one big lump. And then you rejoice in all that goodness. And then you take all the merit from all that goodness and you dedicate it for the liberation and enlightenment of all beings, including yourself. Isn't that a great thing to do? One of the practical ways to do it here is to imagine, you know, you're sitting here and you imagine all the people sitting here in this room. And imagine all the different conversations and life experiences they've had and books they've read and practices they've done that's kind of led them to come here. It's kind of like you think back in time and you see these lines forking out and out and out and out and out. And there's a tremendous amount of fortuitous things that had to have happened for all the people in this room to have come here today, right now. The right kind of influences and everything. And so just in this room here, there isn't just the goodness of this community, and this building and everything, but there's also the goodness that goes back, you know, not just in our experiences in this lifetime, but all the different goodnesses and practices back through the ages that made it possible for us to come here. In the Buddhist tradition, there's often that appreciation and thankfulness of the lineage of teachers that goes back. Because without this being teachers, of teachers of teachers and teachers and teachers, and all the goodness that fed into them, we wouldn't be here either. We wouldn't be supported and encouraged. So it's really a marvelous thing, and I hope I haven't overdone it with talking about how marvelous it is and wonderful. You know, religious people sometimes overdo these kinds of things. But it's, you know, maybe okay a little bit occasionally. But I do, I'm really expressing what's in my heart. And so I really feel really amazingly grateful and inspired by what's here. And I hope that it's that way for all of you, or that you find a way that each of you find a way that our community and our practice center here is a place that supports you. And if you have ideas of how it can be more supportive, then please let us know, and we'll try to find ways of making this place a more supportive place. Do you guys have any comments? Any of you want to say something? Thoughts, ideas about the theme of today? Please.
Thank you. End of...
Thank you. I had a little bit in mind, it might be nice for some of you to say some words about what this community has meant for you. It'd be nice to hear a little bit.
Yeah, I I'm a little emotional. I moved here from Hawaii in 1998, and I was fairly active in the Vipassana community there. And moving here from a very small community to a vast, what sort of felt like a wasteland for me, this was here. You were here. And it's amazing that you've held this space for all these years, you know, just by your commitment to the practice. Because you could have taken many paths, and you chose this one. And for me, this practice has been a refuge that I've taken dealing with my own life and its entrails of karmic. And so to have, you know, the little friend's place and St. Mark's and all this little space, it was amazing that at least I could come here for this refuge. And it's not like I went away for a while. Left coming here as consistently. And during that transition, this place was purchased. I was in those meetings in 1998, 1999. But I haven't been actively involved in this place. And coming back, it's just amazing to see what's happened, what's transpired. And I told Diane the other day, there wasn't potlucks like at St., you know, the other place, because it wasn't a community. Or the social. And the thing I noticed, there wasn't much socialization there. And that was one of the things I commented about. And this now has provided that opportunity. Dharma friends, hikes, you know, all these things. And for me, it's just been amazing. And I told Diane, I said, I'm almost ready to come to a potluck. And, you know, and she laughed. I told her I really appreciated her holding the space, but, you know, I'm sort of a little... human phobic on one. And so I brought a dish today. it just feels to me, I just want to appreciate you and all the people that, you know, I've known throughout the years that are still, you know, coming and going, like my recording friend over there, and, you know, just a lot of people that have really touched me. So I'm grateful you're all coming.
Thank you.
I'd like to express a special gratefulness to the board members and the community members who, in the late 90s, really galvanized the energy with lots of skeptics. It wasn't doable, and we would... Whoa, we got a big crowd. It wasn't doable, and kept on driving the vision to what is, to me, the most inspiring part of my life. And so thank you to all of those people and all of the volunteers that
possible.
Yes.
I feel like in this world there's so much fractionalism and denominationalism that I think it's important also to just recognize the various spiritual disciplines that have been a part of just this building itself. And from the original Mystery Christians who built it 3 years ago or four, and like that they should, and then on to the other types of disciplines like the spiritual paths like unity and so on. And just kind of towards building it.
I should comment on the skepticism that Don mentioned back in the late 90s. I was president of the board. A lot of the board thought Bill was crazy in one place. And we'd never get the money. The ultimate plan we had for getting a place is that eventually we'd die and we'd will all our neighbors.
And now I hear what people thought.
Actually, it was interesting with the, I was very, very surprised with Bill. I had a serious discussion one night about the Indian Zion Church, putting in many hours with the city of Palo Alto and everything else. I said, I give us the best, maybe 20-25% chance of getting this church. And then Bill goes to me. It's more like 5%.
I wasn't so crazy after all. One of the predictions I had was that it would take us 5 to 20 years before we would have a building of our own. And it took 5. Yes?
Senses being very stimulated today, being here. First, just when I opened my eyes after meditating, looking around and seeing so many people, seeing how much has been done in this building and how inspired that is. The individual people taking the time to volunteer to see all of what we're looking at put into place. And then sound of your voice and how my ears responded to what you were saying, which was full of gladness and that lovely luster is quite good. And then the last few minutes hearing smelling something. Oh good, potluck, in a way, and pretty soon anticipating taste.
Well, it might seem like a small thing, but on the subject of the potluck, part of my practice has been, just for myself, has been trying to eat better. And it's been really nice to have a place where I know that the practice that I'm trying to move towards in terms of my eating habits is supported here.
Nice. Hilda.
For a long time, I've wanted a place, had that age so that I'll be able to grow more wide and have a community of people who have put a lot of time in like that so I can grow it. And it inspires me that this community is that way and that it's open enough to younger people and really have a firm place for that. But what it really gives me is a sense of hope and ease in the world, in spite of the news that I hear and all that goes on. I really do have a sense that things are thriving in a way that is not yet seen. So thank you all.
Yes.
One of the things that I've been impressed with how this whole thing came together was your kind of quiet dedication to have it happen. As we looked at various properties, some of us who've been involved in the business community might have taken a more aggressive, hey, we've got to really get in there and call the Evansons or whatever it was with these various options. And you seem to hold a quiet faith and presence that it's going to work out. The right thing will come about. And certainly, a lot of the intentionality of the broader community supported that, because we all wanted the right circumstance, not this one or that one or whatever. And I found that very inspiring. Some of us have talked, I've talked with you and other people before about perhaps having some sort of a residential community where a communal living circumstance, whether it's buying an apartment building together or condos in one location, so that we could have more of a living together practice. And I don't know what form that might take, but I'd certainly like to continue putting the idea out there to the community. It kind of fits with what Bill was saying in terms of a community as we get older. And I lived in that circumstance when I was in college and a big family in the Air Force and even after graduate school. And I found it to be a very supportive environment in lots of ways. And it certainly fits with the Sangha practice because, as we all know, in a family or circumstance like that, all your stuff comes up. So.
I wanted to say how much I feel that the Sangha has not changed in this transition to buying a building. That my experience with the Sangha before, with you teaching, with others, guest teachers at the various places, Portola Valley and Friends Center and St. Mark's, this continuity between transition to owning our own building has not spoiled that. We're a community. Where our focus is on learning about the Dharma and having a practice. And that's, to me, has been the most important thing in this whole process of having a place to learn.
Could you hear okay in the outside? You can't really hear. Ken said that he appreciated a lot how much we haven't changed. That since getting the building, from the time we were in Palo Alto and we met in Portola Valley, met in different places, and having the community and the support and the teachings here, there's been a continuity that hasn't been spoiled by having a building and the growth that we've seen. You.
There's a traditional Buddhist gratitude practice for our meals in which we invoke giving gratitude to all the people that brought the food to our table. And if one begins to reflect on who that is, people who grew it, people who transported it, people who cared for those people, it becomes everyone in the world. And I think the same thing you said about the situation, you find yourself in there.
Could you hear out there now? Thank you. Yes.
I found this book 3.5 years ago. I'm very so curious manner. I was only here several weeks and I walked into one of the meetings. I knew from the end that I had.
Ellen? Yeah.
I also feel very much the same way the first time I was in some of the talks. I guess I just came back from a trip from Burma, not to meditate, but just to see it. And I was really moved to see the generosity of these very poor people. And there was one temple that we went to where there's a huge Buddhist statue that was intended to go to China, and it fell off the truck on the way there. So the Buddhist people assumed, they're very much into science, so they assumed, like, oh, that means that this Buddha doesn't want to leave our country, like, it wants to stay here. So, you know, they're extremely poor, but somehow or other they were able to get an earner, like, collect enough money to. To buy the temple, buy the Buddha from the person who was selling it, and then to build this beautiful temple in the hills outside of Mandalay. And I guess just being in that country, I had forgotten that there are so many other ways aside from, like, greed to operate. I don't know. Anyway, so in the same way, I feel like this dissenter also rose in a way that it's just, you know, all kind of natural and without greed.
Thank you. Could you hear out there? She said that she's returned from Burma, traveling around, and she came across a big temple there with a big Buddha statue. The Buddha statue was on its way to China and fallen off a truck, and they had interpreted that to mean that the Buddha statue didn't want to go to China. And so the local people, who were quite poor, pulled their money together and not only bought the Buddha statue from the person who was selling it, but also made this beautiful temple around it. And she was impressed in Burma, and that occasion, and also in Burma in general, that so much was happening without any expression of greed. And she feels also that here, our community, the growth of our community in the building, was also an expression. That's an expression of generosity. That's so different than what often happens in many cultures or many places where greed is the operating force. So maybe we should stop and we'll stop so we can have our lunch and enjoy ourselves together and talk. Susan Ezekiel is our current president. And Susan has started volunteering in a very small way. Kind of when I first kind of got to know her, really, was she started helping me editing some of the fundraising letters. And that grew very quickly, her involvement, until she became part of the board and then became president of the board. And she became president of the board at a time when we were going to go through the buying of this building here. And she put in a lot of time making all this happen here on many, many different levels, and had the responsibility of going to the title company and signing the documents for all of us. I don't know how that felt to do that. And she spent a lot, many hours staying in touch with people and connecting with people and supporting people and making sure that the growth of our community has been in a healthy way. And she's about to step down as the president, but as she's still president, she'll have the last word before we go ahead.
I first want to say how grateful I am for all the time, energy that many of you bring to the center. I think our volunteers are just a very special gift to the Sangha. And the fact that we can operate our center completely through volunteer efforts is very special in a culture like ours that is so driven by material and material compensation. And I wanted you also to know that we as a community are inspiring other Sanghas elsewhere in the country to found centers. We had lengthy conversations with Robert Beatty, who's with the Portland Insight Meditation Community, talking with him about how we came to purchase this building, sharing our founding documents with him. And I learned that in January, just last month, they have purchased a permanent home for their Sangha now in Portland. And Tara Brock's community in Washington, D.C. has been in touch with us, and so we've been supporting them in that same way, and they're working very hard towards also founding a center in our nation's capital, where they have a great need. So it's kind of like the blood vein that Blanche Harbin was talking about on Monday night. I don't know if that's exactly the right words that she used, but this blood vein that's sort of connecting from practitioner to practitioner, throughout history and eventually flowing back to the Buddha. I don't know if that's the right term, but it's a Zen thing. she described just this flowing and continuity. So that's very special.
And I wanted to just thank you all for playing a role in that. And I wanted to share also something very personal. You know, 3 years ago or so, when we started all the work of preparing and planning to purchase this building, there were some of us, you know, there was the board and myself and Gil and other volunteers involved in that. And some of us were just not sure that this was going to work out. I mean, I didn't, you know, we were uprooting our community from Palo Alto to Redwood City. We were taking on you know, financial debt to buy this building. And, you know, I just didn't know if enough people would show up here or, you know, if we'd be able to take in enough funds to make our mortgage payments and our operating expenses. But through it all, I just sensed in Gil a faith and a trust that it would work out. And so this really sustained me and gave me confidence to move forward. And, you know, the center has worked out more beautifully than I ever could have imagined. We're financially secure. We have programs here, wonderful programs, almost every day of the week. So in the end, this whole experience kind of awakened in me a really deep faith and trust in the Dharma. So I just wanted to end by reading two short excerpts. The first one is from a book called The Way of Wisdom. Among the five spiritual faculties, faith is called the seed, and without it, the plant of spiritual life cannot start at all. And the second one is from the Milan Dampanya. Faith makes serene and it leaps forward. When faith arises, it arrests the five hindrances, and the heart becomes free from them, clear, serene, and undisturbed. So, thank you all.
There is an expression that's used as a part of Anumodana, this rejoicing and celebration. And we could all do it together, and then we can have go out there and have our meal together. It's a Pali word. It means something like excellent, great, great, or far out, or cool. And it's pronounced sadhu, and it's usually said three times, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So let's do that for our... Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.